I've been well known for my one-liners, and you looked at all of them. There are a few things that have come up in my career that I've incorporated in a little talk which I'd like to give at this point. It's interesting that in next spring, I will have been a physician for 40 years. I never thought I'd see that day, but there it is. So I wanted to just share some of these with you. This is something I came up with about 15 years ago, and I've never ceased to believe it's true. People size us up not for what they can get from us in care of the patient, but what they can get from us for as little as possible, as if we're a generic box of cornflakes. And this is a problem that we must resist, because as it becomes more and more untenable to care for patients at what they deliver, patients bear the brunt of these decisions that are made at a macro business level. This is absolutely true. I think Paul could attest to this. If you live long enough, you'll see everything. I've never ceased to be amazed by what happens either in my clinic or in my hospital or in the world in terms of things I never thought would come to pass. And some of it's really good and some of it's not so hot. But never believe that anything that could be possible won't occur. This is I've lived through this one, I can promise you that. You know, there's so many things that we say, oh, so-and-so seems like they're pretty decent people. I think this will probably work out, and boom, it blows up in your face. And that happens at every different level you'll ever want to imagine. When you give your kid the car for the first time, you know, all those kind of events that, you know, the resident says, I'm going down to the ER, this won't be a problem, and 2 hours later you get a call and it's a total disaster. So you need to listen to yourself in terms of whether or not the thing that you aspire to see happen is really going to work out the way it does, the way you'd like it to. How many times have you seen a patient in a head and neck tumor conference where they say, oh, you know, we can do something for this patient, and they have a T20 tumor where you don't know whether to say hello to the tumor or the patient because one's bigger than the other, and they, oh, well, we can operate on this patient. Well, you know, if it's not going to make a difference, you're probably well advised not to do it. And so this is something I said in a tumor conference over and over again. You don't need an operation to die. Sometimes you get under the surface of something that you probably would have wished you hadn't done, and you might be just better off to leave that alone. So some things are really better left uninvestigated. I can tell you when this thing came to pass for me, I did a massive glomus tumor on a woman who was a school teacher in North Carolina. She was very big, and they couldn't get an IV in her, so they put a femoral IV in her. And femoral vein. And she was walking around the hospital 8 days later and collapsed and died. And at the autopsy, we pulled out a cast of her entire femoral vein from her heart. And, you know, I didn't think about it when the anesthesiologist couldn't put the IV in. And we didn't anticoagulate her later because she was up and ambulating around. But this thing was a nidus, and it just goes to show you that when you get into problems, don't ever ignore the little things. And when I get see those things on a sunny paper where which two of these are the same, which two are different, I can always get them right because I always look for those little issues. And as a surgeon, I can just promise you to look for the little things in your life. Those are the ones that are going to come back and bite you. It's not going to be the things that you worry about in the big sense. It's the little things that will make the difference. This is an absolute fact. How many times do you hear people say, oh, I can do 10 tonsillectomies in this one morning? Well, I can tell you something. Once a complication occurs, nobody cares how fast you did the operation. So I've seen pictures of the skull. I know I've never become a member of the American Skull Base Society. And the reason why is because I could never understand how it was such a victory to take half of somebody's head off and call that a big win. So I think, though, that, you know, in some sense that I remember I shared a patient with Paul, a patient of mine who had three kids, and she had a sinonasal undifferentiated cancer, and her husband was a pretty big loser. And she just wanted to live as long as she could. So we did a craniofacial resection on her. Then I took out her eye. Then I took out her palate. And she lived for about 4 or 5 years before she passed away. And so it's, you know, when you talk about something being inoperable, you do laryngectomy, glossectomy. At the end of the day, it's whatever that patient needs to get through whatever part of their life they feel is necessary that makes an operation something they're willing to sustain or not. So a lot of times, you know, you make the decision not just for you or not just for the disease state, but for the patient. So the patient and you, it's a covenant between you and them about what they want to see done. And so those are the kind of decisions that make a difference. If you don't believe this, you've never lived with these guys. You know, when I think about Jack Urban and his business of putting electric power door locks on a Cadillac, and I figured out that he did the first invented a cochlear implant. I mean, there's a bunch of big scientists that did something since him. But Bill House saw this and he said, you know, this guy's got some talent. And even though the first cochlear implant looked like an office fridge that was sitting next to the patient, that was the beginning of something we never would have done without him. And we see that over and over again. One of the things I'm really proud about is when I go downstairs to that exhibit hall, there's so much technical innovation that goes on that we embrace as otolaryngologists. And you know something? That, I think, is one of the big things that gives us a vitality as a profession. In terms of what we do, this is one of the issues that makes us better every day. Is we look at the young people and the engineers and the people who are not entirely just straight line to wherever we are, but where we would like to be. And the young people are the ones that will take that little bit aberrant course that will find a new solution to a problem that we've seen, but we could never really solve it because we didn't look at it differently. And I think that's one of the things I've always loved about our specialty. If you don't believe this, you haven't lived long enough. You know, everybody's anxious to get to this goal or that goal, and you know you should look around every once in a while and see what you might be missing if you didn't make it. You know, I play more golf now than I did, which is really a good thing. You know, my handicap's 9, so I'm feeling pretty good about that. But, you know, you have to stop and have some fun along the way. You know, share opportunities with your colleagues. Talk to them about things that worry you. Be straightforward, you know. Everything isn't always perfect. And if you share things that aren't perfect with you, then you'll hear things that aren't perfect with your friends, and all of a sudden the two of you together can form a solution to the problem. And that's something that I've learned along the way. This is something that, you know, if you ever have a situation that occurs and you're trying to figure out what to do, just drop back and say, how am I going to explain this tomorrow to somebody who didn't have anything to do with this? How will I explain this to my friends or colleagues? And if you can't come up with an instant explanation, then you probably shouldn't do what you're ever aspiring to do. How many times have you heard people, you ask them a question, they pause before they answer. That's because they want to figure out what they said the last time so they don't say the same lie twice. So if you're really thinking about how to respond to things, if you want to know who, like Paul Levine, you ask him a question, bam, you get an answer. Because he doesn't bother beating around the bush. He tells it like it is. Same thing with Jerry Healy up here. So, and my friend Jerry Burke, these and Paul Ward, all these guys that became well-known did so on the fact that they never beat around the bush. They told it just like it was. And I think that that is one of the overriding things that'll carry the day in anybody's career. So these are two things that I never forget, and this works for everything. Prepare for the worst and hope for the best. And if you're going to an operation, if you're trying to figure out how much insurance you need on your car, no matter what you're doing, prepare for the worst and hope for the best. That gets you a long way. And this is another one, and I can tell you with the 8-hour work week and all that kind of stuff, this becomes a big factor. You know, no matter what happens, and you talk about what happens with residencies right now, a lot of times there are these handoffs and people think, well, you know, I guess it's going to be okay. This patient's up there, but they're not that bad off. And you have to remember, when you know something and you delegate the authority, you still absorb the responsibility for what happened. You can delegate authority, but not responsibility. And you should never forget that. Those are two of the things that I absolutely tell every resident I ever get in contact with. And I tell my own kids that, too, because that's something they need to know also. This is something that we see among residents. They go in the lab for a little while, and, you know, sometimes they give up. Sometimes they do something that has a lot of promise to it, but it's just be more work than they want to do. And they just say, I'm just going to give up on that. And then somebody later does the same thing, and they hear it at a meeting, and they say, wow, I can't believe I actually thought of that idea, and here it is being presented by somebody else. Well, you know what? If you hung with it, maybe you'd have given that talk. But if you don't want to hang with it, you're going to miss out on an opportunity to make a contribution. And that's one of the reasons that I've been so constantly supportive of residents doing research, because to me, that's what gives them the nidus to think that they will be able to make a contribution in the future. And, I mean, that's what gives me such a good feeling in this Triological Society, because we see people who've been through most of their young career, and they've still had enough horsepower to put up a thesis and get accepted in this organization. And I'll tell you something, my hat's off every one of them that got through that process. Actually, this is one of the things that I know I'm this way. If somebody sends me an email, bam, they get a response. If there's something needs to be done, my wife will tell you, I never put it off. No matter what happens, if I think that there's something needs to be done, I never like to think that, oh, well, I'll do that tomorrow, I'll do that next week. And so this is from Pablo Picasso. He did a lot of paintings, as you might recall, and he never put anything off. And I think that's something, as a surgeon, I can promise you, if you see something needs to be done and you don't act on it, by the time the next day rolls around, there's going to be a whole bunch of the next day's problems that you have to face that will bite you in the butt, as they say, and you should never forget this particular saying. So that's it. That's pretty much how I've lived my life. And I appreciate Jerry for giving me the opportunity to say these things to you.